Today on The Grave Talks, Ghosts on Your Shelf, a conversation about haunted objects with author Christopher Balzano. Is it possible for an object to truly harbor paranormal activity? Many people say, without a doubt, yes. From dolls to mirrors to collectibles your grandparents might have left you, it seems that many ordinary objects seem to possess an unsettling energy. But why? The haunted allure lies in the unsettling belief that these items retain a residual energy, carrying forth the emotions and experiences of their past. Haunted objects carry an eerie mystique steeped in supernatural tales that blur the line between reality and the paranormal. Could it be that a spirit can't rest and is holding on to something familiar? Is the item itself haunted, or is it part of a haunting? Today, a conversation about haunted objects with Christopher Balzano, author of Haunted Objects, Stories of Ghosts on Your Shelf. Chris, thank you so much for doing an episode with me. It's interesting. I'd been wanting to do an episode for the longest time about haunted objects. I'm fascinated and scared of them all at the same time. And you and your co-author, Tim Weisberg, actually literally wrote the book on it.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, this is not a new book. This is a book that we released about 12 years ago originally. And one of the things that sparked us to redo it, republish it, was the idea that Tim himself does a radio show, a paranormal radio show for the last 16 years called Spooky South Coast. You know, I'm out doing my paranormal thing, and people are always asking us about haunted objects and not the book. They just want to talk haunted objects, right? Like the idea and the kind of allure of a haunted object is more alive today than it is even when we wrote it. And then the other part of it is when we start telling them about the book, where can I get it? Because they have this kind of creepy fascination with these haunted objects. So it's kind of like more than our desire to put out another book and you know, make a little more money off of it, was much more people kept wanting to tell us their stories. And then they wanted to hear our stories and they want to know other stories. And it was like, well, we have this book, you know, the weird history of it is that it was released and it kind of didn't do well. And now there seems to be more people that want to talk about this. And we're like, hey, we should write another one. Why don't we re-release the one that we have? Like, the rights came back to us because the publisher went under. And it was like, let's re-release this. Let's kind of get our feet wet again of these stories and you know, how to tell them and how we told these, you know, them originally. And this crazy and yet completely understandable passion for objects that are haunted and cursed.
I don't know what it is about them that fascinates me, but then I'm also scared of them. And I just brought home a cedar chest from my mother. Mm-hmm. She moved into a assisted living, and it's filled with all kinds of things that as a child, you know, she crocheted or she embroidered. But in this cedar chest are five or six dolls, and one of them we actually threw out. So I was going to ask you your opinion on what happens when you just not accidentally throw away a haunted object.
Like, well, first of all,
is that a good idea, bad idea?
I know the answer to your question for why we love these stories, or why we're drawn to them. A lot of it has to do with, you know, the way that we understand ghosts and the way that we process that, right? And like, we can talk about the famously haunted places that are all across the country. Odds are you're not going to ever be in an insane asylum that's been abandoned and now has ghosts in it, right? Like, so in other words, the ghosts are over there.
Right.
They're safe, right? But when you're talking about a doll that you bring into your house that might have something attached to it, that's something anybody can relate to because it can happen to anybody.
So how did you and Tim end up writing the book? Did you have some experience with haunted objects, or was it you're just interested in it? And it's like, that would be something I'd like to research and dive into.
This is, you know, it's both an interesting and a completely boring story in that I have a friend. I don't know if you know who Jeff Belanger is.
I do. He's been on the show.
Okay. So him and I are really good friends. And a lot of my first books, especially, were Jeff Belanger castoffs. So he was basically like, I can't write this book. They want me to write this book. I'm working on something. Why don't you ask Chris? And so I brought Tim in because at the time it was supposed to be like, okay, we want the book in 2 months.
Just and fast. Like, that is right, really fast.
And I'm not that good of a writer anyway. So I asked Tim like, hey, why don't you be my co-author so we could write it faster? And I ended up, you know, it didn't, we had like, you know, 7 months to put the book together. But the cool thing about it was that both Tim and I approached the paranormal from a completely different aspect. Like we both kind of believe the same core things. And we have a lot of the same ideas, but how we process the paranormal and how its role in our life is very different. Right. And in addition to that, Tim is a news reporter. So you can go through and you can tell probably which stories are Tim's and which are mine based on the way that they're written and we had to marry those two things. So there wouldn't be like, it wouldn't feel jumpy. But it was honestly like those, you asked why, what inspired that? It was those stories seemed to be the most personal because a lot of the stories we cover in the book have to do with someone who, you know, who has passed on reconnecting with you through these objects. You know, they leave something behind for you. And so it sparks that kind of emotional connection between the two of you, right? And that has always been my favorite aspect of the paranormal. Yes, I love a good haunted house and, you know, a haunted hotel and that kind of stuff. But it really was much more about that idea that grandma is still trying to show you that she loves you. And it might be through this doll or this, you know, burnt out flamingo, which is like one of Tim's theory or Tim's stories and something like that. So it really was that these were the stories that were kind of most drawn or most drew me in. Although they're the stories that are personal that are in there, from my perspective, are some of the creepiest ones of my life.
I do want to talk about those too, by the way. So speaking of you and your stories, yeah. Was the paranormal something that you were interested in at a young age? Or because a lot of us, you know, we all got interested in it somehow. And sometimes it's just you went to the library as a kid and you saw this strange but true book and mm-hmm. you read it and you became fascinated by it.
That's my story. You know, I'm that perfect convergence of I was at the right age to get HBO when I was like six, right? Like the first generation to be able to have their parents go to sleep and then you sneak down and watch cable movies that you're not supposed to. And you watch things like The Exorcist and these horror movies. And you're like, oh my, I am so amazed by this. I'm so drawn to it. And it's so forbidden and I shouldn't be watching it. And then my babysitter was the library, you know, both my parents worked and my mom was like, okay, I can't pick you up until 5 o'clock. Walk to the library. I'll pick you up from there at 5, you know? And so I just spent hours consuming all of these, you know, both true crime and weird things going on. And there was no division and things like, you know, aliens and Bigfoot and just kind of reading all of this stuff. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, being an extremely literate kid, I was then just told, like, we're sick of you. Go upstairs to the adult section, you know? And so I would go up and I would be reading these books that were made for adults, that some of them were about, you know, telekinesis. Here I am, you know, like a 9-year-old reading these adult books. And then the third leg that I really kind of just realized is all of this was happening at the same time that Stephen King was king, right? So it was the early to mid 80s when it was seemed every week there was a new Stephen King book and for the first time, like all these Stephen King movies. And that just kind of fed this fascination. I did not have a paranormal experience myself till I was like 19. You know, people, most of the people who are involved in what I do had some kind of experience that fueled them. No, mine was all theoretical. Mine was all books and consuming books and knowing all of these different stories from all these different places and seeing connections between them. So when other people started experiencing things and telling me about them, like personally, I had this kind of wealth of knowledge to draw from to be able to explain it and remember it and then retell it.
I think that's interesting because that really does connect to why you are a writer and an English teacher, you know, that was your fascination as a kid was the stories and the writing and the reading.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and it's the, you read a story, right? And so you were talking about like the haunted dolls, that you got in the chin.
No, I did not get the haunted. They're not. Wink,
oh,
wink.
Okay. All right. Well, you have nothing to know of.
We're telling myself that they are not haunted because the first, maybe it was the day after I got them. So I'm reading the book in the living room. Cedar chest is right there.
Wait, so now you're blaming me. Okay.
No, wait. So I'm sitting there reading and I read the intro. I wrote this down because I sat there for like 5 minutes going, I'm going to cancel this interview. It said, at the end of the intro, for now, turn to the first story. Avoid dolls of any size or age. Stay away from yard sales and put anything you inherit into a safety deposit box. And so I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the cedar chest that I just inherited filled That's with funny. These dolls. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do this interview, but I did. And here we are. So I was brave enough and I have had no weird experiences in the... Sorry.
Seven to nine days, or something. Right? Like if I were to say to you, I think my house is haunted, blow, and you may believe it, not believe it. But if I say, you know, I got this little toy from my grandfather when he passed away. Like we went in and cleaned his house, and the little toy truck. I'm not kidding you. It rolls across the floor when it's not supposed to. All of a sudden, because of all that other stuff that is attached to that story. It makes sense.
Yes.
So even if I don't believe in ghosts, that ghost story seems 100% true because it makes sense. Like, yes, your grandfather was attached to the toy is now in your house. Your grandfather loved you. Like, so, and so you can feel these stories, which in different light, if it was a different kind of story, no one would believe or they'd be like, oh, that was nice. This other one makes more sense because then you look around and you say, well, I got that at a garage sale, that I bought on Facebook Marketplace, that my grandmother gave me, and you start thinking that you are surrounded by potential haunted things. So when all of a sudden your light in your kitchen starts flickering, my light in my kitchen is flickering as we speak, because it needs to be changed, all of a sudden it makes more sense because it's right near the dish that I got from my grandmother's house last week. And
right.
So we automatically can kind of make that mental leap, which makes it come alive for us.
In my house, I either bring things in through Target or I bring in very few things that I don't know where they originated. And I did have somebody, I love history and I love history regarding Abraham Lincoln. And I had somebody bring me this Abe Lincoln bust, life size, like it's a regular size head. And it's super cool. But when I brought it home, I really debated on bringing it home. In fact, I left it in my office for quite a while, not knowing what to do with it. And it came up on Facebook Memories recently that when I brought it in, my dog freaked out. And started barking at it because it was weird looking for my dog, you know?
Yeah.
Now I've had it years. I never had anything happen, but I'm telling you, when I brought it in my house and my dog started barking, I was convinced it was a haunted object. I was convinced.
All the tumblers fit, right?
Yeah.
It was this weird thing. It was connected to a famous case. Now the odds that, you know, Abraham Lincoln's ghost is attached to this head in any way, shape or form, right? So remote. And yet,
yeah, that Abe Lincoln probably isn't, but I was like, what about the guy who owned it?
Exactly.
What's his story?
Or the guy who made it.
Exactly.
Right?
So
the kind of, you know, it's funny. One of the main inspirations as I was writing the book, and I was working on my parts, and I know it sounds completely silly, and I don't even know if I mentioned this in the book, was an old episode of the cartoon G.I. Joe. And in this episode, I think it's called the Phantom Brigade. It's called the Phantom Brigade. And in this, Cobra, and for anyone who's anywhere younger than me, we've now completely lost the audience on this. There used to be a show called... And if you, the funny thing is, if you look back at that show, it all has to do with folklore and mythology and, you know, like, let's get Excalibur's sword so we can rule the world. And even though you don't think it, when you look back, a lot of the episodes are like that. But anyway, they created this army of dead people by owning things that kept them onto this world, right? So one was a ring and another one was a sword. And so they were actually able to control these ghosts and use them to try to conquer the world based on the fact that these spirits were trapped on Earth because of their connection to these objects. And as a little kid, that made total and complete sense to me. And as an adult, like pushing these stories out, the same kind of thing happens, right? Because we automatically think, well, imagine the attention and the focus that it took to make that bust. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like Abraham Lincoln. How do you do anything like that and not have a little bit of yourself rub off on it, right? Or even the person, the passion when someone knows you and they bought it for you. Right? Like, if we believe that ghosts are real, that kind of attention, that kind of energy is enough to make something attached to it as well. So there were so many ideas like that that make haunted objects something that are completely realistic.
So when you did the research on the book, a lot of these stories, you know, there's some that you found, you know, like there's a haunted inn. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in some of them, Lizzie Borden's house. So there's some, yep, you know, that you could find the haunted object story. But some of them are just regular people haunted object stories. Where did you find these people?
So what it worked in the reverse order, right? So being the, you know, at the time that we wrote the book, I had just left Massachusetts. And I was pretty well known in Massachusetts. I had already books published there. I had a very successful website that focused just on Massachusetts hauntings. And so, you know, I was someone that people would go to, or people would find, I should say, to tell their stories to. In addition to that, like I said, Tim was a paranormal radio host of a show. And so people were constantly telling him stories. And so what ended up happening was the reverse. It would be people would tell us their personal stories. And then we would find kind of famous stories that were connected to it, right? Or that made, or that, you know, had the same kind of theme. So it's, and oddly enough, that's one of the reasons why people, I think, didn't like the book, was because it focused so much on urban legends or famous cases of haunted objects and put them alongside personal stories. And I think paranormal people, when we put this out, they were very much into evidence. They were very much into, you know, I just want the facts. Can you prove it? Does it make meters go off? Like those kind of things. And so they didn't want to hear about, you know, a case like James Dean and his car becoming cursed and cursing the owners that owned it afterwards alongside a story of a haunted medallion, right? Because it was like, well, where's the proof? Where's the evidence? And to go way back to your original question when you asked me about the doll, so many of these cases, and I don't have this any idea why, because we wanted it for the book and we wanted it for follow-up. These haunted objects, more often than not, find a way to go away, right? You have it, it's there, and then all of a sudden, one day, you just can't find that picture anymore. Like, I know I used to have this framed mm-hmm. picture that weird stuff was going, and now it's not here anymore, or every single day I did this and finally I was able to kind of talk to my grandfather about it and now nothing happened. So I can give you a picture, but there's nothing going on anymore. And so a lot of these haunted objects, they either run out of fuel or they disappear or they lose their supernatural tint because whatever kept the person here, you fulfilled for them, that unfinished business idea of the ghosts.
Because that to me makes sense. Why an object would be... Now, I think mirrors might be in a different category, but...
Oh, yeah. You could do an entire mirror book, right?
Right. So. But I think that an object, and let's use example, a doll, but my mother was attached to that doll at one point in her life, or maybe, yeah. But sometimes it's funny because in the book, there was a short story on a butter dish.
Yes.
Which made me laugh out loud when I read that. Just the haunted butter dish made me laugh because you don't think, you see a butter dish and it's like, that couldn't be haunted, or could it? Bom, bom, bom.
Bah, 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 butter. The funny thing is we are probably most attacked for the butter dish story. Because how dare we tell a ghost story that involves a butter dish? How boring. Like, you're just scraping the bottom of the barrel. And the point was, it wasn't the bottom of the barrel for the person who had the experience.
No, not at all.
Like, that was like, you know, it was almost as if, how dare you? We have in our minds what haunted objects should be. It can't be a flamingo, right? It can't be an alarm clock. Please, everyone knows those things are always broken, you know? And so we wanted to, and those were the stories that we were getting from people, right? And our rule, and both Tim and I kind of have the same driving forces. He's maybe a little bit more about evidence and proof than I am, especially now, but it is how genuine were the people telling the story, you know, how much emotion and how much truth do they seem to be telling? Right. So for example, there's this story that's not in the book, because I got it afterwards about essentially, an uncle who buys his nephew these cars, and he's kind of like lackadaisical and he's not responsible. And right before his nephew's birthday, he dies. And days after he's passed away, he leaves a message on his sister's answering machine telling her where to find the gift for the nephew for his birthday.
Ooh.
Right? And so that's the kind of story where the woman told me, it gave me goosebumps when she told me the story, right? She cried intermittently as she's remembering not the haunting, but her brother. And it happened 10 years before that. So she didn't have these little, you know, this little train set, whatever it was that her son had been given anymore. And yet I could tell from the way she was telling the story and the fact that so many of the details were not cliche or not like standard issue, that she was telling this from her heart. And so that's the kind of story that we included in the book, because I can't prove your Ouija board story. Everyone thinks their Ouija board's haunted, right? But is your story compelling enough, and are you telling it in an impactful way? And do I believe you enough to believe the story? And those are the kind of personal ones that made it into the book.
See, and what I think is interesting is, of course, we all think of haunted mirrors, haunted dolls. You know, there's just kind of a typical category. Mm-hmm. But that's why I appreciated a story about a haunted butter dish. There's haunted paintings, you know, so there's all kinds of different objects in the book, which I appreciated that, but then it makes me think, great, one more thing that could be haunted around my house.
Right. My favorite one, and the one that I was researching, because the butter dish is one of Tim's stories, right? But what the story that I found weirdest, right, because it made no sense and yet makes complete sense, was the story of a woman who bought a filing cabinet at a yard sale.
That was a weird one.
And she, like, who's ever heard of a haunted filing cabinet? Unless you're talking Hung Fung Cooey or something like that, right? Like, right? Because he used to go in and transform. Sorry, Hung Fung Cooey joke for you. but, like, who's ever had a ghost story that involved a filing cabinet? I can't even think of, like, a weird, creepy thing in a movie, right, that involved one. And yet this woman brought this filing cabinet into her house. She got it for a great deal, you know, and all of these crazy things. I don't want to give away too much of the story, but I'll give the ending away. All of these crazy things started happening to her house. And she started seeing this woman wandering her house who seemed to try to be talking to her. And as a lot of ghost stories go, as that communication wasn't happening, as this ghost was trying to tell her something and it wasn't getting through to her, the ghost started getting more and more violent towards her. And it was just one of those things where it was like crazy, and then it escalates to the point that they stripped the the filing cabinet, and they found inside the woman's birth certificate. And it was the woman's birth certificate that connected her to this world. She could not leave. She actually wanted the birth certificate to go to her kids. Now, the woman ended up burning it because she was freaked out. Like, she couldn't handle everything that was going on. And that was enough to make the haunting go away. But it was the, as she's telling me this story, I had no idea where it was going, right? Because it was like, okay, filing cabinet. All right. What, haunted taxes? Like, what are we talking about here? And then the other part of it was I'm looking around as she's telling me the story, and my entire garage is filled with filing cabinets for all my research.
It's like, great.
It's like I am completely surrounded by the exact thing that she's saying is haunted, and I've never heard a ghost story about this kind of thing. What have I gotten myself into? And so those are the kind of stories that I really was drawn to as we were collecting them.
We're just talking, too, about mirrors. And I think mirrors, there's a whole nother level of why they could be haunted. Something about, you know, people looking into them and seeing themselves reflected in them. There just seems like a mirror itself, there's a number of ways why it would be a haunted object.
You know, it's funny, like you were saying, I'm a high school teacher. I taught middle school for years as well. And so usually around Halloween time, I'm actually going to be doing it in the next couple of weeks because, you know, I couldn't do it around Halloween time. I start getting into urban legends and kind of ghost stories and bring these things in. And one of the things that I always talk about is Bloody Mary. And for years, I'm talking like 15 years at least, part of the assignment is I will give you extra credit. I will give you an A+ right now on your assignment. All you have to do is go to the bathroom right now and do Bloody Mary. Do whatever version of Bloody Mary you know. Or do it tonight, however you're supposed to do it, and film it and bring it into class, and I'll give you an automatic A this quarter. And I have never had a student actually go through with it.
Because that's, I think the story itself scares us. And if there's a little bit of possibility of that being true, you don't want to bring it in.
Yeah, right. And it's one of those things where we were talking earlier about inviting stuff in and making the common paranormal. That's the perfect example of it. And there's just enough about that story that seems true that it evolves. So I don't think this is in the book, but years ago, my daughter, who at that time was probably 10 or 11, right? Maybe a little younger. And she asked me if I would set my alarm to wake her up at 3:00. And I asked her why she wanted me to wake her up. And she said, well, I have to do Bloody Mary at the 3 a.m. challenge. And I was like, okay, all those things that you just said are making me excited. What are you talking about? And her generation, she's now 15, her generation, you do Bloody Mary at 3 a.m. because that's the witching hour, right? Because paranormal ideas and supernatural ideas shift, right? So Bloody Mary, when I was a kid, was always you did it at midnight. You had to do it exactly midnight. And you did it 3 times. Well, then Candyman comes along, and all of a sudden it becomes 5 times, right? And what you're supposed to say, are you supposed to say Bloody Mary come out tonight? Are you supposed to say Bloody Mary? Are you supposed to light a candle and blow it out? Or are you supposed to do it in complete darkness? Does she scratch your face? Does she kiss you on the back of your neck? Do you feel her massaging you? Does she kill you? Right? Like all of these things shift and change. And so when I go out and I do presentations and I talk about, you know, a haunting in Florida that's very similar to Bloody Mary, I ask the audience, first thing I ask, give me your Bloody Mary story. And usually there are 7 or 8 different versions of the story. And everyone is almost embarrassed that they got their version wrong, that they're telling me the wrong story. And I always say to them, there is no wrong because it's an urban legend, right? Like all of these stories are true because people feel they're true. And so part of the reason why that Bloody Mary story is so universal is we have this obsession with mirrors, right? There's something spiritual about them. There's something weird about gazing into a mirror. If you ask the average person, why does a mirror even work? They probably don't know. And if they understand the science, there still is that, but it really doesn't make sense part of their mind, right? And so the more we learn about science and all the stuff, it doesn't take the mystique away from the mirror at all. As a matter of fact, there are more urban legends now about mirrors than there were back then, because we have all those superstitions from back in the day and 7 years of bad luck. And, you know, if you put two mirrors next to each other, you've created a portal like across from each other. You know, you add a little bit of stuff that happened, you know, with Bruce Lee and his curse to it, and that you kind of know about a detail of it. And then these mirrors just become these absolutely crazy things. And why do some families cover the mirrors after people die? Like, all of these things kind of right. add to your understanding. So when something weird happens and you go by a mirror and you see a reflection that's not yours, that could have just been a trick of lights, it makes sense that it could be haunted.
And I think, like, for example, I grew up in a haunted house when I was a kid. I had this thing about looking in the mirror, thinking that something could just show up behind me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I saw that in a scary movie at some point, but it just Every seems like movie. Things can come to, exactly, things can come to you through a mirror. It just feels like that's a possibility.
Right. And you know, when you hear then of the true story behind Candyman, and this crime where the man actually came through the walls and through the mirror because it was a crawl space, it only adds to it. Even though you know what's behind your mirror in your room, you know, in your bathroom, whatever it might be, it just adds to it, right? Because there are true elements of some of these stories. And then there's this other thing about it, that mirrors seem to be eternal, right? Because you can have all this stuff and there was a fire and stuff like that, but for some reason the mirror survives, or there's an estate sale. We take care of our mirrors because of all those superstitions. So there's one of those objects that's most likely to survive and be passed down to somebody, right? And so you have all of these mirrors that look the part of a haunting, right? They're these creepy old-fashioned mirrors because we don't want them to be destroyed. You don't throw it away. It's not on my watch. I'm not going to break it and throw it away. And so they survive generationally, and that adds to this creepiness factor to a lot of them.
I never really thought about that with a mirror and the whole superstition behind breaking one. So you can't really break it. If you throw it in the trash, you could break it. And you're going to get this bad luck. So then that makes sense why some mirrors would stick around and be passed down.
I mean, I remember my mom passed away about a year ago, and she loved old things and she loved antique-y things and stuff like that. And one of the things that was left behind was this beauty set that I never saw her use. It was just always displayed, that had been her grandmother's. And it was like this, like, jewel-studded brush with this jewel-studded mirror that was on this fancy, like, little case, right? And so the brush, who the heck knows where the brush is? It's gone somewhere because she packed it up years ago. That mirror is still around. The funny thing about that mirror is I brought it to school one day in high school. We were doing this activity where you had to get up in front of the class and recite the Shakespeare sonnet, you know, "Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?" And so the whole class had to memorize it, right? And so you could do it in some weird and funny way. You know, so one person did it to his girlfriend, like, recited it to his girlfriend. One person, as a joke, you know, recited it to the teacher. Another person rapped it. Me, I got up in front of the class and I pulled this mirror out because it was the only handheld mirror that I knew of, right? I pulled this mirror out. I looked in it and I recited, you know, "Shall I compare thee to a summer's day," about myself to me, right? Very witty. And, you know, the class ends, there's applause. The teacher comes over to me and he looks at me very seriously and he says, "Never bring that mirror to class." And I'm like, "Why?" And he's like, "You could break it." And he's like, "Not only that, things can attach themselves to mirrors. What are you, crazy, walking around with an old mirror like that? You don't know where it's been, what it's seen, right? He literally said that. And it kind of just adds to this idea that we have of, you know, all of the, and then you have all of that stuff. And then, of course, attached to that same idea, you have people use it to conjure darker things, right? or to see the dark side of themselves, to split their personality. This is folklore now, or, you know, like, you know, ghostly lore, but like to split themselves into their good and bad sides. So you're looking at, you're the good side, the bad, the worst parts of yourself are in the mirror, right? And they can be trapped in that mirror. And then you have like being able to summon things from other dimensions, because so all that stuff added together makes me wonder why anyone ever buys a mirror.
I mean, I get why we use them.
And they're oftentimes, because I'm even thinking like so many car legends and like ghost hitchhiker type legends, what do they involve? You look in the rear view mirror and there's someone in the back seat through that mirror, and you look back and they're not there when you actually turn around, right? The same thing that you were saying about the inside the house, it also impacts our car. So it's this weird kind of, you know, the mirror is used, is a way of us seeing who's following us.
Now, that mirror that you have, you don't feel like there's anything attached to it.
My mother's mirror?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have it. What are you, crazy? I was able to say, oh, you know what? That's really more kind of like fancy jewelry type stuff.
It's not for me. I'm a guy.
Much more have that. No. Last thing I need is my mom looking at me through a mirror.
Judging.
So, exactly.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about haunted objects with Christopher Balzano, who wrote Haunted Objects, Stories of Ghosts on Your Shelf with Tim Weisberg. You can purchase it or any of Christopher's books on Amazon or wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening. Thank you.